Hey, everybody. Welcome to Losing Your Mind with Chris Cosentino. I'm your host, Chris Cosentino. We are here to talk about people that inspire. And all my guests are inspiring in so many different ways. And I'm really looking forward to digging deep into how they got to where they are, to the top of their game, how hard they've worked, how much they've given up, and how they're giving back. So without further ado, here's our next guest.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dare to Suck. Officially, this is the new name. Giuseppe, Chef, you get to be the official new Dare to Suck podcast number one. We're transitioning the name. Thank you for taking time. So Giuseppe Tintori is the chef in Chicago. He works with the Boca Group. He's in charge of Boca Group catering. He's got GT Prime, GT Fish House. He and I have crossed paths many a time when I come to Chicago. It's always fun. Thank you for taking time to be on here with me.
Well, Chris, I'm super excited to be here. And I love the new name, by the way. Very charming.
Dare to Suck. I mean, I think it's kind of important, right? It's like, you gotta be willing to fail to improve.
That's life. If you don't fail, you're not going to improve and you're not going to push yourself.
So I want to kind of start at the beginning for you, Chef. Like when you started, Giuseppe, you're from Italy, right? You moved to the States when you were 19.
I did. I was 19 and I met this, one of my mentors, Gabriel Vitti, in Milan. He stashed in the restaurant I was working. And it's like, I just finished work at Joao Robichon for a year, Girard Day for a year, and San Domenico d'Imola. Now I'm going to go back to the States and I'm going to open my own restaurant, French Italian. Do you want to come over? Maybe be working pasta station. So I was like, yeah, I'll come and do a stash for 3 months. Never been on the plane before. Didn't speak any English. I think everybody will understand it from this podcast today. That addiction in my pocket, Gabriel picked me up at the airport and I fell in love with Chicago. And I'm still here 30 years later.
I mean, that's amazing, right? Like 19 years old, never been on a plane. You leave your family, you know, you leaving Italy, not speaking English either. So what was that like coming to the States? You know, you're in Chicago, which does have a large Italian community, but it's not the Italian community that you're used to. It's an Italian-American community, right? So you got your gabagool, you got your prosciutto.
Yeah, it's a little different. And I learned a lot of stuff right away. And the first impact, it was April and it was so cold. I was like miserable. And to be honest, we got a taste in the last 2 days too. It's like -2, -5, or -20. Chicago has been good to me, and the Italian community, where I was living was Highwood up north. So it was like a strong Italian community, Highwood, Island Park. And all of those friends, they kind of take me over. So I'm like the new friend. I should teach these kids the way the States things are done. And I learned my way up. I was with Gabriel for 3 years. It was, very demanding chef, since you work for Robichon and Girardet and all these amazing chefs, very strict. We are like, when I say very strict, I don't think people understand. Every day you get 3 towels, you get 1 chef talk, you have to hold it all week. Doesn't matter. If you destroy or get dirty, you have to buy another one. You have like a neckerchief, which is like you have to tie like a tie knot pretty much. And you buy like 2 or 3 because they don't get dirty during service, especially if you work on pasta station. And it was an experience. It was like very unique.
What you're explaining is a very traditional European style kitchen in the States. Like that doesn't exist. Like 3 towels. And I'm sure like you had a sponge that you could wipe your cutting board with, so you didn't ruin your towel, right? You had 1 wet towel, 2 dry towels for service. Like everything is very specific, right? European way. It was a full on brigade system, right?
it was that way. Also, because you have to remember, it's a business too. You got to make money. You cannot have 10 towels in the kitchen because, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to hide something or wipe the floor. You have to be smart. You wet the floor, you get them out. You had to, I'm not saying you're like in the army, but you had to be very smart and consider like yourself like as a businessman. Eventually, I'm going to open my restaurant. I want to do that too. I mean, I roll my apron and three towel and give it to my cooks in the kitchen so they understand to not overuse product in the kitchen.
And how was that received when you started doing that? Was there just like a look of like, are you kidding?
It took me a few days to figure out all the stuff because my English was terrible. Like I didn't understand it very well, but you have to like, when you work in the kitchen, especially in the rest of the business, you have to observe with your eyes. You cannot just wait for people to tell you what to do. You got to steal stuff with your eyes, how people do things, and so you can become a chef someday.
And what was the name of this restaurant?
The name of the restaurant was Gabriel. And Gabriel Vidi, it was his last name. He opened multiple restaurants in Highwood. Also, it was 1991 Food and Wine Best New Chef.
Oh, wow.
Still like my mentor is the godfather of my son. Now he live up in the mountain. And Gabriel, in the last 10 years, he climbed all of 7 summits, swim in the English Channel. He's very active. And 5 years ago, he's like, I want to learn how to sail around the world. Bought a sailing boat, got it, fixed it. By himself, he went all around the world sailing for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Determination, right? The learning. The pushing.
Chefs.
Yeah. There is one thing that all chefs have in common, right? It's ADD, right? They're constantly looking at what else we can do, how to make things better, how to improve. So you're there for 3 years. What was that next step like? I mean, I'm sure you have moments that you can remember, like the worst failure working in that kitchen. And like, what was that repercussion for that said failure? Like, I know you have that one in your head, like that moment where you're like, oh, I really screwed up. I'm going to get it.
Because I did. I got yelled, like pull out on the back in the alley and get screamed. And I was like, what the fuck? I really care about this place. I thought I did the right job, but I didn't because I didn't understand. Like in a squash blossom, you got to take those little stem around the petal outside off for this pasta, and I didn't understand it. So I put them in the pasta and I got yelled 3 times to the point like I really understand what it was telling me. Like every mentor that I worked for, which is 3 like major mentor in my life that they helped me push who I am today, private and professionally. They always teach me something. Gabe was very, I won't say strict. He knows what he wants. He was a chef. He's like, I don't want to change too many items on the menu. I want to make sure these are perfect. And creativity was not in the kitchen, but consistency was in the kitchen.
Consistency is king, truly.
It is. That's why you have to fail so you can become very consistent. You need to perfect like the dish that you're making. Yeah, you can change eventually. We can talk about different mentors during my career, but Gabriel was like one of the chefs is like, Giuseppe, I got so many resumes when I opened this restaurant. I have some cooks, they come here with pictures of dishes that they create at home. And I look at this picture, I'm like, that's a great picture. But see, Giuseppe, a cook, a chef, from the differential between cook and chefs, we can talk about this all day, but in the way he told me when I was 19 and 20, consistency is the key. See, like a chef can make that dish 1,000 times and be the same. A cook can make it just once. You tell them the repeaters like, I don't know what I'm doing. That's a huge difference.
And that comes down to repetition and practice, right? Like, I don't know about you, but we used to do chicken butchery next to each other to see who could break down the most chickens, right? Like perfectly. And it's like, okay, I'm going to get a case done. We want airline breast. I want a deboned. you know, thigh and leg, and then French that leg bone. Like, okay, who's going to get the most chickens done right in the time and be perfect? And it became that game, right? Like, and I'm sure you did this, like, whether it's sardines, filleting fish, breaking, portioning perfect beef, or cleaning tenderloins, everybody had that moment.
100%. And for me, that one, it's fun in the kitchen too. You steam with yourself. It's like time is everything in the kitchen. You know, besides consistency, now time. You have to like, time is like not just the preparation, but during service too. You have to time everything. The movement that you make, can you make less movement and be consistent on what you're doing? Then become smarter so you can do other things in the kitchen. Butchering for me was like a Charlie Trotter, for example. When I was butchering fish, I was going over there and I had literally 4 hours. Those 4 hours of butchering fish is not just 10 sardine or one salmon. It was fish for a muse bush. It was fish for a fish course, fish for mid course, fish for extra course, and fish for garde manger. So what I'm talking about over there is like you do like 6 whole amachi. One day, that's one day, 6 whole amachi. You will do like 4 whole salmon. Then you have to portion it, portion like 1.5 ounces each. Then you have like the skate wing, or you have like branzino, or you have your nightmare, which is like do like 90 rouget. You have to scale them and fillet and pin bone and portion it, you know? But those, that's, you have to time yourself, because like, guess what? 3 o'clock is coming, 3:30. You have to be on the station and try to work with the team. So you have to like make sure your knife is sharp and go for it.
So after this 3 years, what was that next step for you?
So next step, I went to Utah, Salt Lake City, with my best friend, Matthias Merges.
Oh, Matthias.
He was a sous chef at Gabriel. So I worked with Matthias my first week there that I was in the States. I didn't speak any English. We were organizing some garage. But then he told me, he's like, I'm going to Utah, Salt Lake City, open a restaurant, Metropolitan, a little more fine dining. You want to come? I was like, sure. So I went to Utah, 95 till 98, Salt Lake. I have to tell you, like, my heart is there because once a year or every 2 years, I try to go down to Moab and the desert, hiking, camping, disappear from people when I can. And Utah, we try to do fine dining for 3 years. And it was a struggle, I will say, to do tasting menu in a place where people, they want a larger portion. And we were shipping fish from San Francisco, from IMP, doing different stuff, was baby vegetables, nobody heard. And it was an open kitchen too, kitchen table to top. They will see you like when you're grilling and cooking and butchering. It was an amazing experience.
And so you went from cold to cold again.
Yeah, a little bit
cold. And then how did you go from there back to Chicago? Was that the next step?
So in 98, we decided let's move back to Chicago. Matthias was he already came back like 6 months prior. And he was the CDC, the first CDC at Charlie Trotter. And let's be honest, I saw the cookbooks. They look amazing. I never worked in the kitchen. I remember stepping in the kitchen in May. It was a Friday before NRA show, not the GAN, National Restaurant Association in Chicago.
Okay, so and, for everybody here listening to this, walking into a restaurant for the first time to work a station during the National Restaurant Show in Chicago is the equivalent, I would just say, of trying to drink from a fire hose. There is no other way to explain it. Everybody in the industry shows up, whether they're chefs, anything that's associated with food is there. And they're going to come to the hot restaurants. And they go from restaurant to restaurant to restaurant. They'll eat 2 and 3 meals a night if they can make it happen. So you just got bamboozled, didn't you?
It was more than that. Also, it was a time in 98. There were not too many restaurants in Chicago like now. So Charlie Trotter was open 7 days a week, but on the weekend. So I have no idea what I was doing. I was like a line cook. I went from sous chef to back down to line cook so I can work my way up and learn something new in my career. That's what I want to do. It was not about the money. It was about learning. So I started with that, like in the bottom. I was in Grill Station, and the Grill Station at Charlie Trotter, it was two chef station. One was cooking, one was plating. And the guy that started with me, he was from Iceland. So you have this giant Icelandic man, Verl Anderson, which we still best friend till these days, gigantic, an Italian guy, and try to communicate on the what they were calling to us. What they were calling to us, it was like, pick up 6 squab by 4 squab by 8 lamb by 3 bison. And you know, sometimes you look at each other like, what the fuck? And the other sushi are like, just cook me. Don't worry about it. Put meat on the grill and start cooking me. And it was like you say, like you explain it in English very well. Yeah, it was a unique experience. But I survived. I was there for 9 years.
I mean, to walk in for your first shift and drink from the fire hose of the National Restaurant Association 4-day extravaganza in Chicago to then stay there for 9 years. I mean, you worked your way through the whole system with Chef Trotter and eventually became the CDC.
I did, yes, the last 2 years. It was
that's a huge 9 years in one place is a really powerful education. I mean, you absorbed so much knowledge, not only from the surrounding chefs that were coming in new to work there, but from Charlie and all this, the chefs and sous chefs above you.
All the guest chefs too, that came in the restaurant. It's incredible. I have so many stories, like it's mind blowing. People, they will understand it. Like it was before the social media, Instagram and picture. The thing that went on through the kitchen, just caviar, it was like, you know, the 1 kilo tin, we used to use like 3 of those a week. The chefs that went through the kitchen as a guest chef, Chris, I'm talking about from El Bulli, from Fran Gialbert. Girardet was the most intense chefs, I think, for my experience in 9 years that I worked there, because he never came in the States. So people that I know was Freddy Girardet, probably. Freddy Girardet was a chef in Switzerland, 3 Michelin. And there were like besides Bocuse, it was like, and Ducasse, you have Robichon in France, very consistent on his food dishes. They make them precise, they barely change it, but they're like incredible. Then you have Girardet, which is like Charlie. He like to change with the season and change every day and be artistic. So Charlie really respected Girardet. So he never came in the States. I remember Charlie sent a private jet to pick him up in Switzerland. Came in Chicago, and that weekend, we worked so many hours. I think we slept maybe 16 hours, I will say, in 3 days or 4 days, whatever it was, slept, because you're in the kitchen all the time. Closed the restaurant on a Saturday. Hey, let me know if I talk too much about just one event so we can talk about
stuff. No, it's okay. It's great. I think this is really, it's fun because like these are those powerful moments that you have that really transcend the education, right? Like this is why you chose to work there. Like you said something I think is really important. You stepped back from being a sous chef, took less money to be a line cook, to learn again, to learn more, and to the ability to move forward. And I think that is a very powerful decision. And I don't think enough folks make that decision when they have that opportunity. And I think you become comfortable having a higher pay scale. You become comfortable being in charge or having power, right? In that said mind, whether it's a sous chef or chef de cuisine, but to step back and start all over again, it's humbling, but at the same time, it's empowering because you're growing.
You have to do that. If you, in this profession, if you can, like I was the old man there too. I was 28. Everybody was 21, 22 in the kitchen. Charlie, you know, and you have to like hustling. You have no time to complain. And the whole day, I don't think people, no, I'm not saying they don't understand. You have to like leave and breathe in the, now we call them the 2-3 Michelin star restaurant in the United States. And you have no time, barely have time to eat. And those 2 days off that you have, one, you sleep because you're so tired physically. And the other one, you try to go out, eat in some places and have a little life if you can.
Do your laundry in the hotel too, right?
Yeah. No, but the Charlie Charlie Spanish with so many chefs was very unique. Like we were traveling a lot. We went all over the country. I went in Moscow, in Russia one time for like a week to work in a restaurant for Charlie. It was great. Like an amazing experience.
So you're there 9 years, you know, and what in that time that you were there, right? I'm sure I got to hear, what was the biggest mistake and what that you made and what came from it? What did you learn from it? Because I think that's a really, we've all made big mistakes. I'll share one with you, but you got to share that one with me first.
There were multiple big mistakes, not just one. Yeah, the biggest one when, so the time allergy will start coming up in the United States, like shellfish allergy and nuts and so on. So there was one table that I sent, they have like allergy to shellfish. And I was expediting, I was in charge of the kitchen, and I made a mistake to send like one dish or like some kind of sea urchin sauce or mousse or something. That person got really ill. The ambulance came to the restaurant. You know, it happened a couple of times, like not just to Charlie, but in general in my career. Not that, but just the ambulance came because of the allergy. And that was like one of the bigger mistakes. The next day, I remember Charlie called me, like, upstairs in the office, myself and another manager, and, you know, give me, well, we had a good talk, I will say, in the office. And that was one of the bigger mistakes. Another one that I will never forget in my life. It was like, you know, the 5 mobile star, they come into the restaurant and give you the 5 mobile awards. The inspector came at the restaurant. At the time, was a sous chef. There was no manager there. So I gave it the tour entire restaurant. And when I said give it the tour entire restaurant, you know, you show them the bathroom. We just read the bathroom. You have this Irish carpet. Just like you give them everything. And, you know, you're excited. You, like you feel like you own the restaurant. Oh, Charlie on that one. Like you have to find me. Doesn't matter what I am. I need to give them a tour and show people around because it's my restaurant. And I messed up on that one, but nobody told me otherwise. So I did the best I could. You know, it's one of those places when you have to like a lot of places you have to survive and try to make things happen. And that's what I was doing for the restaurant. But yeah, those two that were like the two bigger mistakes. What you got, Chris?
Guest chef at the restaurant comes in and they're doling out work to all the line cooks. And they said, I want you to clean sweetbreads. And I said, okay, now this is, now put this into perspective. It's all the sweetbreads for the dinner, which is in 4 hours, clean the sweetbreads. Okay, chef. And I clean the sweetbreads. Well, I clean them into peas to nuggets. I kept cleaning. I didn't know. Nobody told me. I cleaned them down so far to such pebbles that they had to rewrite the menu that was already printed because they couldn't be used. I mean, I had like, you know, little tiny nuggets. I just kept peeling because I didn't know. Like they
so
were.
Go back. So go back 1 second. See what he just told me. And I told you too. The shellfish was my fault. But the sweetbread and like the tour from Charlie, I don't think it was our fault because nobody showed us what to do at that time. somebody give you a demo, one clean sweep, right? Maybe you did the right way, but.
All they did was blanch them and hand them to me and say, peel them. And I said, okay.
Just kept peeling. But they should show you at least one, like just the skin off outside. You leave the whole lobe so they can slice and cook it.
I think it was the assumption that I had been shown before. Talk about like, man, I just sat in the corner, right? Like, and that's actually where I learned, you know, I learned a lot from that. But I also learned a bad behavior from that. And that was, I got bollocksed so bad that I was told to stand in the corner and watch them cook, which then I proceeded to do later in my career, which wasn't the right thing, but I would unbury people on their station. And that was, you know, that's where I learned that bad behavior from. It was like, okay, you're in the weeds. I'm going to work your station, stand in the corner and watch me. This is how you do it. And then I'd have them come back to their station. Was not the best, not the best. You do the same.
I'm not saying I did a long time ago, but also I did it with people that were like, I have to say that when you're a manager or a chef in the kitchen, you earn some kind of respect, not just because of the title, because, you know, all the station. If somebody talk back to you, it's like, oh, I can't do this. Or they say like this respectful thing. Sometimes you have to show them, like, let me show you how to do it. And I'm not saying push people away. Like, I mean, work the stations. Like, why don't you go work another station and I'll work your station tonight. We can talk about like the culture now. Like 6 years ago, I had one of my cook, like one of my sous chef left. So like, can I apply for a sous chef position? Like, well, you know, you're good at what you do, but you're not ready for sous chef. This is your second job. You have no experience. How are you going to lead the kitchen too? Oh, no, no, I got it. I'm like, you sure? All right, that's there. I'm going to get a fish tomorrow, bronzino. You fillet one and I'll fillet one. You know, I got it. I know how to do it because I watch it on YouTube. I know exactly how to do it. I'm like, I see, that's your answer. You watch it on YouTube. You don't have too much experience. He came next day, you know, I butcher one. He butcher his. The fish was already dead. He died twice that day. You know what I mean? I'm like, I get it. You want to learn, but
I definitely had that desire as that young cook to get to the top. I mean, I had my days, you know, I was working at a restaurant that I lied. You'll love this one. And it's known, like I was working with Christopher Lee, who was the chef at Chez Panisse. Wow.
Yeah.
And I somehow or another got the opportunity to work there. And they said, have you ever butchered a lamb? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And they sent me down to the butchery room. And I sat there and worked with my fingers, like making sure I was following seams, and I got it done. And Chris comes down. He was like, you just fully lied. And I was like, yes, chef. And he was like, okay. And I was like, I had broken it into quarters and I was okay. Right. I'd broken it down to basic. Okay. And he was like, all right, I'll walk you through the rest. But I mean, that was my first like breaking down a whole animal. And it was bellwether lamb. Like that would have been a pretty awful, you know, use of beautiful product and just bad. And I lied to get there.
I think you're not the only one. I did it too once. You know, in that profession, people, they assume that you know all of this stuff. And you have to touch and feel it, smell it, listen. It's the entire process of cooking. Cooking is not just something you can watch them on TV or on a computer on your phone. You have to like really like when you work in the kitchen in the morning. For me, like when I was associate, just hear like the seasoning of the meat and the pan, and you had the vegetable. You can hear, you can smell it when the time was like it's time to add like a red wine, the sauce, and it's something penetrate like in your gene, I will say, and you love every single second. And when you walk in the kitchen, you can tell who's cutting corner, who's not doing the right thing, who's like had too much fun the night before. As a chef, that's who you become. Like when I was at Charlie, there's no time for that. You're like, you're 7 hour service nonstop, maybe going to the bathroom once in a while, and you have to watch everybody. It's a different responsibility. And you learn from that. Like Charlie will come in the kitchen. I remember time we had a kitchen table, he will not say too many words. He was like, you know, like put his finger on his nose up and down, like something doesn't smell right. Well, we got to change the oil on the dish machine. Or, you know what I mean? But when you're like in the moment, you can see everything. Charlie was very unique. He had like seven cents. Yeah.
So you're 9 years there.
Yes.
What is that next step for you? Because like, that's a pivotal, that's a chunk, right? Like not many people can say they spent almost a decade with someone. Like
true. So after Charlie, I was decided like after 9 years of time for me to do something on my own. And I have two opportunities. One, to go work in San Francisco for Michael Mina. They interviewed there too as a CDC. Or try something on my own. And I met with Rob and Kevin, the owner of Boca, Starbucks. And I decided to go work with them. And I when I decided to go work with them, I don't think they have an idea or I have an idea what I was getting into, to be honest. The kitchen was like, it would rain outside, we're running pastry. It was not like custom kitchen like Charlie Trotter. You had to like roll your sleeves and make sure like it doesn't get too cold outside or... it was very different. The team was not like, yes, chef. It was more like, I'm in a lean. It's not my station. I'm going to watch the guy next to me go down and searing duck, but that's not my problem. So when I stepped in the kitchen, yeah, it was Boca. So I was a Boca.
So in to put into bigger picture, I mean, you received two Michelin stars with Boca.
So Boca received one Michelin star when I was there. So Boca 2007, I started Boca, and Boca is next to Alenia. So sometimes the chef from Alenia, I work with some of them like Curtis Duffy, John Schill. It's a small family. They'll come over there and grab some stuff. It was nice to see him. So I started in 2007. 2008, I got my first award, Food and Wine Best New Chef. Super excited. I remember the call. It was like changed my life. I was at Boca and it was on a Friday. Donna Conan called me. It's like, AGT, Giuseppe, want to let you know you're like one of the new best new chefs in Food and Wine. Rod and Kevin, my partner, they were in another restaurant. It's called Landmark at the time in a meeting with another chef. So I ran over there and I told the manager, I got to touch Rod and Kevin. So in their mind, it's like, oh, shoot. He's going to leave. He doesn't want to work with us anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I want to talk to them now. And then I told them, like, we are going to Aspen in June. So they were super excited. And that changed my life a little bit. Yeah.
I remember you on the cover.
You know, I love that was the only cover that never made the front page from Food and Wine.
No.
Because they did not like it, the cover, because we were not in white jacket. It was the only cover at that time. It was.
And then it must have been the pictures because I remember
getting. It was a picture.
Of you every year. I remember seeing you in the magazine. I thought
it was the cover, but they put another cover on top to cover the cover because they don't like the picture. Like, yeah. But anyway, it was great. My mom was very proud at that time. That's all that matter. Okay.
Oh, man.
Good time. So that was a Boca 2008. Then I decided to open, my partner and I decided to open like a seafood restaurant in Chicago, GT Fish and Oyster, which was in 2011. And when we opened that place, which I closed last year, unfortunately, for a business reason, it was open for like 11, 12 years.
I love that restaurant, by the way. Oh, how many times did we like, I would come and see you like late night?
At the bar, yes.
Oh my
God. Man, and we shot in 10 years, like, over 2 million oyster, 2.5 million oyster. That place was so, like, you know, the James Beard Award when it came to Chicago. The first year, it was the anniversary of Alenia, 10 to 20, I don't know, 15. And Nick Acones invited us over in his house. We have a little drink. And then Gavin was around there too. And I was like, we'll be going for lunch. Well, let's go to GT. It was like 4 hours before the awards. Because it's close to the awards, to the Opera House. So Gavin is coming with Andrew Zimmerman and two other chefs. Then you have Jose Andreas and six other chefs showed up over there too. And they were like one big party. It was like the best, one of the best memory there.
That's amazing. Those are like special, right? Like you can't, you're cooking for your peers and your friends. And that's a powerful feeling.
It feels like an oyster to cut yourself. Yes, it's great. I love it. You're nervous. You're freaking out. You know what I mean? Jose will be like, I'll take 5 dozen of them. I'm like, oh, shoot. Let me go with my shocker.
And it's, you know, you just said something that I think is really important. You were nervous.
Oh, 100%. Excited and nervous.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the joy of what we do is that nerve. But also you having respect for your peers and still to this, you know, I'm still like, I'll have moments in my, when people come to the restaurant and I'm like absolutely shitting myself nervous because I don't want them to have a bad time. Right. And like, you want your friends to walk away excited. You want your friends to be, your peers to be excited. It's nerve wracking still every time. Doesn't matter if they're your best friend or not.
True. Like, this is the best feeling, to be honest. They're keeping your toe in a way. Like, Chicago is such a small, we know each other. Like, everybody knows each other, like, as a chef. See, I think every city, every chef knows each other. So when chefs come over here or you go over there too, one, you have to be very respectful. Not drink too much or have too much fun in that place, because you have to remember who you represent. Yourself, but also the team they're working for you. So it's not just you. And when you have chefs come into your restaurant, you try to do too much sometime, overkill with kindness. And I did it so many times, but yeah, it's not a good thing to do, but I don't care because I want to show, like, you know, thank you for coming over. And when you have a big guy like Danielle or so-and-so coming to your place, it's like, it's even more nerve-wracking because they will check every single little thing that you serve or people that what they do. Like, I have so many stories about my team. You know, we always gonna make mistake. Like, at a Sarah Gurmer one time, she came for lunch of fish. I tell my SA, she's like, I'm sitting on the table, talk to Tony Mantuano and Sarah and everybody else. Then they want an espresso. I'm like, make sure the espresso is a nice cream, okay? My SA is looking at me like, no, chef, they don't want any cream in their coffee. I'm like, oh my God, let me make the espresso for them. You know what I mean? It's just like, what are you going to do? You can do so much, but yeah, you're always nervous.
I mean, and that's, I think, what's part of the joy of cooking is that feeling of seeing excitement and that taste memory be rekindled with somebody. Like, it's a great feeling.
Listen, one thing I try to tell everybody, Chris, my people, front of the house and back of the house, try to treat the guest or whatever you cook as for like somebody that you really love. It can be mom, sister, or wife, or kids. You cook in a totally different way, or you serve in a totally different way when somebody that you love will come to your table. And it's true. And that's called a hospitality. Like, my first mentor from the restaurant I worked in Milan for 4 years, Lino, let me know if time is good, okay? Lino told me, like, Giuseppe, I was 16 or 15. It's like, when you cook something, it can be a risotto, it can be a simple thing. Cook it with passion because you love it. People that can taste it different in their will. As a 16, and a dumbass that I was, I didn't understand it. As time goes by in my career, yes, I understand. And it's true, because it's true. Then I have Gabriel Bidi, the guy I was mentioned before, Chef Gabe, consistency. And then you have the third chef, my mentor, Charlie. You got to be a little bit innovative, change the same thing you do, and make it a little different, be creative. And usually those three mentor suggestion or thing that they've been told me with time, because it was time. It's like, I work in my first restaurant for 4 years. I work at Gabriel for 3. I work at Charlie for 9. So I was not there like 6 months and I'm going to jump in another restaurant. You're not going to see everything. You're not going to learn what the restaurant tried to give you or this business is about commitment too. Like I see cooks, even server, because it goes both ways, they come and go. I'm like, you're stashing this restaurant. You know what you sign up for. Don't say it was too hard. Don't say you don't like because you work in a steakhouse or an oyster bar or a 3 Michelin star restaurant. You had the luxury to stash. You know, like when I was at Charlie, I want to quit the first week I was there. I was like, this is like, wow, intense. But I signed up for them and I give them 3 months and then 6 months and then 9 years. But yeah.
So do you, there's a couple questions I have. There's a bunch of little things. And one, what was the moment when it clicked for you? That moment when you're cooking, like at Charlie's, right? At Trotter's, what was that moment where all of a sudden it just, boom, you got in the flow and it just moved. You know what I mean when I say that?
It was like 9 months after I was there. I was in the middle of fish station and I was not just working fish station, but also was helping people on my left and on my right. And it was like it was a dance. It was like very unique. And don't get me wrong. You're like next to one person for 7 hours, like elbow to elbow. And that was a time I was like, I can cook 6x8x10x2x8 fish and listen to what I was rapping in the kitchen. And then you have guests walking behind you too. So you have to be careful with the pan and pots because Charlie will give him a tour in the kitchen so they can get up the table so he can turn the table. Very smart man. But also it was an experience for the guests. Like these days, when you take guys in the kitchen? Never. But anyway, that was 9 months after I was at the restaurant. I just felt it like in my body, like really, I just love every single second. When I was a Charlie, but I worked before in another restaurant, but that was like, I was 26 or 28. It's like, yeah, love it.
It's interesting, right? It's that I like, you know, in sports, they call it the flow state, right? Where it's almost like your brain doesn't need anything else. It just, you go, you're just doing. And it seems you're dancing with the cooks next to you. You're ebbing and flowing. You're not really bumping into each. Everything is just poetry in motion. Like that is the flow. And that moment is pretty powerful, right? It changes everything.
Yeah. Yes. And when I say yes, it's like, for me, more than powerful, it was like, it's to me till these days. Like when I walk in my kitchen, I know people that should sit behind. I never sit behind. I'm like, open your fucking eyes. But also, yeah, you have a hot pan and I get and all that stuff. But if you have like eyes behind your back, you can see what's going on. When you go like in a great, great kitchen, people, they don't talk. They're just listening, watching. And that's what it's all about. Yes, I work in a different environment right now. But when you go like high-end restaurant, they just yeah, chef. You just listen to what they call. You just make the dish. And you have to be consistent about it. Yeah.
What would you change? Is there anything you would change from the past?
Yes. If I have to go back in time, one thing I will change in my profession, it will be try to do more stages. After I had my job, like I say, it was my day off, do more stages. I used to do it, but I was very exhausted. I wish I saw some of my friends that went, when I was a child, I went to El Bulli for 3 months, or they went in England, or they went in France. I wish I did that more and more so I can not just learn from them, but can see how they run the business in the kitchen. Because you have to remember, the kitchen is where our passion is, but you have to pay the rent. So when you butcher your lamb or your fish or your vegetable these days that's so expensive, or your eggs, you have to be careful what you're doing with the rest of them.
Do you have any regrets?
You're good, Chris. You should keep up with this one.
Sorry. I told you. I warned you.
I thought you can pass too. I'm my therapist right now. Big regrets for me. In my profession, I don't, to be honest. I love the mistake that I made. Maybe I think when you stay in a restaurant for 3 to 5 years is enough if you're not the owner or partner. 3 to 5 years, this should be enough. And I wish sometime I was a little more cocky. That was my only regret. I would just like try to please everybody instead of like look at myself and be like, no, I can do this. Instead, it's like, well, maybe I've not been long here enough. I should have those guys, you know. I'm like, no, fuck it. Just jump in and be a little more cocky than nice.
If you could sit down and have dinner with anyone, past, present, dead or alive, who would it be? And what would you eat?
Don't laugh, okay? There'll be two guys really that would love to. One would be John Wayne and Vince Lombardi. And there will be some meat involved and Italian dishes.
Nice. All right. What was the biggest flop of a dish that you thought was spot on?
Not so many to recall.
We all have them, dude. We all have them.
We all have it. It's just like, well, I remember the first time my first menu at Boca, I did this grill amaci, grill just one side, and I made some red wine olives sauce, some braised kohlrabi, and another vegetable that I remember. And at the restaurant, nobody fucking get it. It was like, this is amazing. The fish is beautiful. They have the acid, the red wine. I was thinking about my Charlie Trotter, you know what I mean? You can do it in a tasty menu. No, like not a la carte. Nobody will order. To the point, it's like one of my partners, Kevin, was like, Giuseppe, maybe we should pour, instead of amaci, white fish on the menu. You know, how much it was like so expensive. We should put white fish just for the food cost. And I was like, white fish? So I know this story, I keep going on and on. To be honest, I have no idea what white fish was. I thought it was like, what is that, turbo? It's a white flaky fish? It's a flounder? I'm like, what the fuck is white fish? And then I found out it was white fish. I'm like, okay, well, let's put white fish and crust it with some herbs. And it was great. Anyway, I match with the black olives and red wine sauce. I thought it was great. Anyway.
Isn't it funny that we all have those, right? Those we're like, man, this dish was amazing. And then it just doesn't sell. And you're like, why? Like, what is it? Is it the servers don't want to sell it because they're afraid of it? Is the customers don't want to try it because they don't know what it is?
How many quests true?
It's like, what is it? It's like you're going through it in your head over and over again. You were like, this one. And you know, it's funny because I remember like, and I'm sure you do too, when we would get, our magazine would come out, right? You would get Food Arts. And every couple months they would do the flop section. Remember?
Yes, I do. I'll tell you a story.
And I would read those and be like, that dish sounds awesome. Why did it flop? Like I would have ordered that. And then I'm like, of course, it's like, oh yeah, I'm a chef. I'm one of like, you know, one of a
so
hundred.
I learned to pin on that. When I used to make unique dishes, I used to put like duck balls on the menu, like testicle and tongue. Oh, yeah. I used to call them duck fries. There's some people like, oh, can we have an order of duck fries? And the server will explain like, well, they're not really dog. They're not French fries frying duck fat. They're like the testicle of the duck. I'm like, oh, no.
Trust me, I have plenty of experience with that.
Well, I got in trouble one time with veal brain. I used to describe chicken nugget, veal brain, veal cheeks, and a grilled veal loin on a dish. Amazing. But I used to tell them, like, yeah, it tastes like a chicken nugget. So when my server described to the guest a chicken nugget, she ate it. She fucking lost her shit. Ah, such a bad review. Anyway, no, what I learned from my flop is, like, when I have a dish, I think it's okay. I'll have, when I see a normal person tasting, somebody's not in the industry, and give me feedback and see, like, what do you think about it? Like, you order that again, like, more like a simple person, like a steak and potato. And I love their feedback because they're more, like, genuine, and they tell me, like, oh, I'm not so adventurous. Food art, then I'm done with story. Well, I have a lot of story. One of the last copy food art, I was on the cover of that one. It was a story about Charlie Trotter, and they put me on the cover, me drinking like a cappuccino with the GT fish in the back. And I thought, like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. That, I think, was the last, one of the last issues, because the magazine went down. I'm like,
I miss that magazine.
It was the best on that industry. That magazine, when it used to come out, was like,
oh, we'd fight for it. Like
the Bible, yeah. Every single time.
Remember you used to, like, go to the, I remember I did, is that, so, like, my first job working for Mark Miller at Red
did.
And I would go into the office, and that's how I met my wife, right? She was his marketing.
Oh, wow.
Right? And I would go up to the office, and the food arts would come in, and all the cooks would, like, wait because they wanted to rip out the subscription thing so you could try to get it subscribed to get it sent to your house, right? So everybody's waiting, and it's like, all right, you got it last week. I want the subscription thing this week, and everybody would fight for it.
It's the best magazine.
Best magazine. The best. You know, the Batterberries were amazing people.
Incredible people. Unfortunately, yeah, time goes by, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that,
that was like the thing.
Oh,
everywhere.
That was...
No matter where you are, it was the Bible. Like, for all the hospitality, it was incredible just to open and look at it. All the news, they were there, the new restaurant.
Oh yeah. There was, and I think, let's put that into perspective, right? That was the internet for us.
Yeah, it was, really.
There was no way to find out what was going on in other places until you got the food arts, and it always showed up on the 15th.
And I think about it, it was like 3 or 4 months old already, like the stuff in there. But yeah.
It was incredible. It's true. It was 3 or 4 months old already. So you were already behind the eight ball. So your favorite cookbook, one that you go back to over and over again.
I don't have one, to be honest. I have a lot of cookbooks. You know, I love your display back there too. And I have that too in my house, but I'm at the restaurant now. I have an octopus behind my head. I think, like, in My Gastronomy by Fernando Puant, it's one of my favorite things to just look at and read about it. And I love cookbook when they have no recipe. There is some of them in my place with no recipe, just the story about the dishes and the philosophy of the chef. Those are my favorite cookbook to look at it.
You know, it's funny because there's a lot of great books that come out of Japan that have step-by-step pictures. And of course, I can't translate it. Even with Google Translate, I can't translate it. It's just ridiculous. But those are some of my favorites because you're like, oh my God, what is that technique? Or whether it's fish butchery or just offal cookery or just whole new world. And the pictures are stunning.
But at this level of about experience, I have a lot of books with recipes that I used to go look at it all the time. I prefer with no recipe because you inspire, you can look, you can think about your own version.
Yeah, makes you think all over again. I think that's what's really fun. So
nostalgia with nostalgia, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how many cookbooks do you have, you think, in your collection at this point? It's overwhelming, I'm sure.
We always have a lot of cookbook. I probably like 600, 800.
That's crazy. It's fun. And that's what makes
like behind your head, you have Ferran Adrià. A cookbook, the orange stack right behind.
Yep.
So I have that one too. I did an event a long time ago in Chicago, and I got that sign, which is great. And usually when I have cookbooks, I try to give them away to my great chefs to get them inspired too a little bit. as a gift. I don't want them back as a gift, because eventually they'll look at it and I'll write something into for them, pastry chefs, line cook, anybody. But what I try to say is, like, Ferran Rial, when I came for the cookbook, it was with another one of the best chefs, I think, for me in the world, like Andoni from Mugaritz. He's like one of the chefs. He's such a humble man. Find the way he does stuff, I mean, in the way he created food is so unique. Like 20 years ago, he did like this potato that looked like a rock. Can you eat it? It's hot and cold. Like, Andoni is one of my favorite. But anyway, so Mugaritz, yeah.
All right. So what's next for you? What's going on right now?
Try to keep my business alive is next for me. I have GT Prime, which is a steakhouse, 7 years old. I do catering for Boca, like you mentioned it. And I have two little kids, 9 and 11. And I try to be a good father for them right now that they need me. One of my very, very good friend and mentor told me, Giuseppe, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything. So right now, I'm just doing my thing at the restaurant.
That's awesome.
But the goal someday, I want to open an Italian restaurant. So who knows?
Ooh, that'd be fun. All right, you ready to play a game?
No.
No. I think you know this game.
Okay, let's do it.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Milk or no milk?
Milk.
Pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes.
Oatmeal or yogurt?
Oatmeal.
Bacon or sausage?
Bacon.
Chicken or duck?
Duck.
Beef or pork?
Beef.
Quail or squab?
Squab.
Hot dog, hamburger?
Hamburger.
Ketchup or mustard?
Ketchup.
French fries or onion rings?
French fries.
Taco, burrito?
A taco.
Pasta, noodles?
Oh, pasta.
Ravioli, dumplings?
Ravioli.
Raw oysters, raw clams?
Oyster.
Lobster or crab?
Crab.
What type of crab?
Like king crab, snow crab, yeah.
Sea urchin or caviar?
Sea urchin.
Meatballs or sausage?
A good meatball.
Pizza style?
I have to say that.
Just because you live in Chicago doesn't mean you have to say Chicago. You could.
No, I like Napolitan style pizza.
Red wine, white wine?
White wine.
Light beer, dark beer?
Dark beer.
White spirits, dark spirits?
Dark spirits.
Champagne, Prosecco, Cava, or Lambrusco?
Champagne.
Prosciutto or jamon?
Come on.
Oh, it's okay. Ice cream, soft serve, gelato, or sorbet?
Sorbet.
Cup or a cone?
Cone.
Sugar or styrofoam?
Sugar.
Chocolate, fruit?
Chocolate.
Dark or milk?
Dark.
Honey or maple syrup?
Honey.
Favorite candy?
Gummy bear.
Guilty pleasure?
Panettone.
Last meal?
No self-control on panettone. It's the worst.
Last meal?
Rabbit with creamy polenta and a side of porcini with snail.
Oh my God, I love that. Awesome. So folks, if you need to find just Chef Giuseppe, you can find him at GT Prime.
Follow him on his Instagram. You can see what he's got going on. He's always cooking beautiful food. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you folks how much fun I've had when I've eaten at his restaurant. So, Chef, thank you for taking time.
Chef Chris, it's always a pleasure. I love the new name, by the way. Ciao.
Ciao.